Hi everyone, it's Bill Black, the Exit Coach from the Exit Coach Radio Show. You know, one of the biggest questions I get on the show is, what exactly goes into a business exit plan and when should I start creating mine? Well, I always tell people that the best time to start was 5 years ago, but the next best time is now because you never know when you might need it. So we put together a free report that describes what an exit plan is and what you should know. You can get it free by texting exit plan with no spaces to 44222. That's exit plan to 44222. Again, text exit plan to 44222.
Welcome to the Exit Coach Radio Show, the show for baby boomer business owners who are looking for cutting-edge information as they plan their 3 to 10 year business succession and exit. Every week, we interview top professional advisors for their best tips, strategies, and precautions so you can be well-planned. And now, here's your host, the Exit Coach, Bill Black.
Well, hello, everyone. Thanks so much for joining me once again today. Pleasure to have you with me. You know, in the field of exit planning for business owners, the original organization focused on this topic is a company called BEI. And for the last 25 or 30 years, BEI has trained professional advisors to do comprehensive and customized planning for business clients, and then equipping those advisors with software and tools to manage each client's exit planning journey. And today I'm joined by President of BEI, Elizabeth Mower. Elizabeth leads BEI in fulfilling its mission to help business owners benefit from their life's work. And she's joining us today to talk about what she sees happening right now in terms of owners of closely held businesses creating plans for the future. Elizabeth spent the first phase of her career working directly with business clients, but for the last 15 years or so, she's been dedicated to helping advisors deliver better outcomes to their clients. So nobody has a better thumb on the pulse of what's going on in the world of exit planning than Elizabeth. Welcome to the show, Elizabeth.
Thank you, Bill. I'm so glad to be here.
My pleasure to have you back. You've been on several times, and it's always interesting because, you know, when we talk to advisors, Elizabeth, I mean, they're kind of thinking about what's going on just with their several clients that they're working with. But you, on the other hand, are above all of that, looking at and seeing what's happening with a whole bunch of advisors and all of their clients, and so you're in a really good position to tell us what's happening in this field. So tell us, what's been going on at BEI? How have things been going, and what's the climate like for exit planning today?
That's a good question, Bill. And I think that the best way to say it is that, you know, the short answer is those who are inclined to plan continue to plan no matter what's going on. And so what we are seeing in the conversations that I'm having, and that's probably just in the last 10 days, I've probably had either one-on-one or a small group roundtable style conversations with, you know, probably 30 or 40 advisors who work extensively or exclusively with business clients, and then they've all shared what's going on in their practices. So I do have a pretty good sense of what's happening across North America, and I've been very surprised that the answer has been there's a lot of planning going on, and it is shifting though. So what we're seeing is more planning in specific areas that are rising to the surface of more concern to business owners. People who own closely held businesses, family-owned businesses, are kind of shifting their priorities a little bit. And so it's nothing especially surprising or that can't be handled, but owners who, you know, thought they were going to put their company on the market in a few years have maybe accelerated their process and want to go to market maybe sooner because they just don't want to mess with this and they don't know what the future will hold. Owners who thought that they were going to transition ownership of their business to maybe employees, their management team, a co-owner, have maybe changed their timeline, or they've changed who they want to transition ownership of their business to for a variety of reasons. And then probably the other major area that I'm seeing a lot of movement in is that there's nothing like a good kind of disruption and emergency to cause people to really kind of revisit all of their emergency planning, their contingency planning, what in our space we might call continuity planning. That's like, what is going to happen to my business, my employees, my family, if something happens to me? There are a lot of baby boomer business owners who, you know, are wondering, what if I get sick? What, you know, I'm not necessarily die. What if I'm out of commission for some length of time? Have I done enough to allow my business to survive? So those are the kinds of things that people doing planning are talking about, and planning activity and volume is pretty consistent from even a year ago.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And, you know, the BEI process, for those of you who might not be familiar with it, is for basically owners who are going to exit, not tomorrow, but in the next many tomorrows, 3 to 5 years out maybe is optimum when I talk to someone, and I think that's probably what you hear too, Elizabeth. But the thing about it is that one of those steps is always be ready for anything that might happen to you as an owner or your key employees, anything bad that might happen along the way, always be ready for that. So this COVID-19 kind of emphasizes that type of planning, because now, of course, there's one more thing that can happen that nobody saw coming. The other thing about this that's interesting, I think, is unlike the Great Recession, where we kind of, the economy's going down, it's going to be a while, we've gone through recessions before, this is a little weirder and different because it happens so quickly across the board, especially in certain types of industries. What would you say are the ways that this current situation for owners is the same as it was during the Great Recession? And in what ways are things different today?
I'm seeing a lot of similarities and a lot of differences. I would say, you know, as soon as the pandemic really got off the ground and came to the United States, not having any frame of reference, I was really braced for just repeating the experience we had in the Great Recession, because I had no other, you know, I had no other benchmarks or anything to compare it to. So what I saw then was, I think business owners shut down and kind of dug themselves into a little containment field more so in the Great Recession than they are doing today. And they were more cautious. They were less likely to do anything. And so I did find that, you know, ability to plan for the future was really diminished during the Great Recession. So to late 2008, 2009, all the way through 2010, it kind of had a long lag. It was a big punch in the stomach. One of the things that a lot of people are talking about is that financing and banking was much more fragile during the recession than it is today. And so today there is access to capital. There is a huge sort of bucket of private equity money just looking for a home. And those private equity firms are essentially required to go and find businesses to put the money in, that, you know, pandemic regardless. So the financial systems are just completely different. That's one of the main differences. So I'm not seeing business owners today dig themselves into sort of a bunker and say, let me know when this is over. So that's a difference. And one of the ways I see that maybe things are the same is that, you know, what we thought would be kind of this tsunami of baby boomer business owners, they're older, and even then you can lump into that group sort of young business owners who have kind of a fast turnaround time. They have a fast kind of exit strategy. They want to build it and sell it as quickly as possible. We thought that all those people would create this giant sort of wall of people transitioning out of their businesses. And it's really been smushed down and kind of spread out over time. And people are not leaving at any particular age. They're leaving when their health or their other situations call for it. And so I've still got tons and tons of business owners across the country who are still actively engaged in their business. But the thing that's the same as during the Great Recession is that there's a lot of them who are saying, I don't want to have to do this again. So, and I know you're hearing that too. People are just saying, I can do this. I can get through it. I will be okay, excluding certain industries that have really been quite hard hit. And, but I can't do it again. And so that's the same as the Great Recession. We really saw, once that recession was over, a real spike in business owners, closely held, family held businesses, trying to figure out what they wanted to do, be really thoughtful about it, but maybe put something in place so that when the next situation came up, they would be more prepared or they would already be gone. And those who didn't, or those who were too young to have that feeling 10 years ago, are saying that now. That's what I'm hearing.
Yeah, that's interesting. I think the some of the similarities I've seen is that, you know, we don't know how long the duration of these events is going to be. And I think with COVID, we were first like, well, you know, six 2 weeks, 60 days. So we suited up for a 5K run, if you will.
Yes.
And we'll be done. We'll be done. We'll be back to normal. Don't worry, we'll be back to normal. Well, now, if you're listening to this in the future, we're now 6 months into COVID, and now it's more like a marathon. Well, how long is this going to last? We see people changing their planning, and they're adapting new habits as well with technology. So things are changing mightily. We don't know how long it will last. And the other thing that I think is notable is that these baby boomers that were old in 2008 are older now. They're 10 years older, and a lot of the business groups out there, like Vistage Worldwide and other business groups, are saying, hey, you got to watch out for the end of the decade. In 2029, there's going to be some severe financial problems. So it's going to put a lot of pressure on people that are business owners to do something during this decade. So maybe that tsunami is just going to be a bigger wave that collapses faster. We'll see, I guess.
It could be, you know, or it could be a slow burn. It's really hard to tell. And, you know, what we can say overall is that those who plan come out better. So this is true, you know, in my yard with my landscaping. It's true in my business with my staff and my employees. It's true with my clients in planning. And it's true, you know, in all of us trying to get to some kind of retirement, whatever we call that. So those who think about it in advance and do something in advance just tend to end up a little bit better off. And so, you know, one thing that we've been seeing a lot of is maybe a pulling back from everybody trying to do everything. It's another trend I've noticed in the last 10 years. It's just not possible anymore, right, Bill? Things change so fast and people have been so busy that really broad sort of wide sweeping, comprehensive, everything but the kitchen sink projects are just really hard to get done right now. And so those who can break them down, put things into priorities, break them up into phases, have been doing a little bit better and getting more done than those who have stuck to the sort of all or nothing kind of approach to doing anything. So I have seen that as also another kind of trend. And I don't know if you've seen the same thing in your work, but I've definitely seen a more kind of incremental, progressive approach to thinking about the future than I used to.
Yeah, and I've seen the statistics, especially that BEI puts out, Elizabeth. And one of the big things is that a large, large percentage of business owners have talked about the fact that they want to exit their business someday with their family, not with their employees or their suppliers, certainly, but with their families. They've talked about, you know, maybe 3 to 5 years I'll get out of this thing, but they haven't really started the clock, and that puts them in an awkward situation because it's on their mind, but no one's helped them start the clock, and that's where BEI and its process and the advisors come in, is they actually can lay out a process, a roadmap, if you will, to help people get that are business owners to get from point A to point B. So another question for you is that a lot of owners are more busy and they're stressed out. And if we assume that's true regardless of geography and industry, are you seeing any trends or bright spots that would help an owner take steps today that move them toward whatever it is they want that future to look like?
Yeah, I would say there's probably a few. One is that, you know, sort of the field of exit planning, or sort of the dare I say, profession of exit planning, is something that's pretty new. It's probably only 25 or 30 years old. And it's really been developing and expanding. And there's been a lot of people kind of saying, okay, this is what I think it is, and this is what I think it is. Well, you've got a lot of business owners listening, and they just really don't care, I don't think, what, you know, CPAs and lawyers and business consultants think a definition is. I just don't see business owners being very concerned about that. What business owners seem to kind of universally appreciate is progress, results, people being able to effectively present them with options, so that they can make a decision. I mean, how many times a day does a successful business owner, even a not successful business owner, get presented with a decision to make and then make it many times every day, 7 days a week, really? So I've noticed that the professional services community has kind of backed off from being really sort of impressed with itself and saying, well, you know, we really know how to do this. This is our process, and allowing business clients to kind of start thinking things through themselves. And I think it's a really, positive sign. I think there's a lot of business owners who are naturally DIY, and they are naturally sort of like to be in control. And so allowing a business owner to kind of get started is a really nice way for them to feel like they're managing their own process. And so I'm now seeing a lot of advisors, providing resources or guidance so that owners can kind of start their own process. That's typically in the areas of sort of, you know, thinking through your goals, thinking through what you want your financial situation to feel like. You might need a financial planner to help you develop a plan for yourself, but what do you want your financial situation or experience to be is something business owners can really think about and articulate. And what do they want to, how do they want to spend their time, and what do they want their future outcome for their employees to look like? So business owners have really sort of been now, I think, given permission to kind of take the lead on some of those kinds of things. And advisors have gotten a little bit less kind of bossy and controlling and said, okay, those are the things you've come up with. Let me help you do that. So I think a real kind of sort of more collaborative approach between advisors and business owners in the marketplace has been really good for everybody. So that's probably the main thing that I've seen that has improved. And then, you know, secondarily, I would say there's just a lot of very, very smart professionals out there who have a lot of good ideas and a real interest in helping business owners create their own future instead of jamming a particular solution down their throat, which owners just really hate. So I think more customized, more outcome-driven work is going on today compared to 5, 10, and especially 15 or 20 years ago. And I think that's a really positive trend, and I think it's going to continue.
It's, what's interesting about it is I think a lot of people, a lot of business owners go to an advisor, a particular advisor, pick one, and they say, you know, how do I get out of my business? And the advisor might say, well, I'll come up with a strategy for you. Now, here's the real truth of this. The exit planning is not a strategy. It's a process. It's a project. And it's highly dependent on the owner's goals, right? That, like we always talk about, well, who do you want the business to go to? What's your timing? What do you need to get out of this? We need to be clear on that. And then it's a whole book full of strategies that need to be implemented by your advisors. And someone needs to put together that book, that plan that everybody can work from, kind of like an architect would for a building. And then the CPA can act on the tax issues, and the attorney can act on the legal issues, the financial planners and others can act in their specific areas. So it's orchestrating this whole process. And BEI has a massive amount of content for both business owners and advisors available free at BEI's website, which is clearly put, exitplanning.com. Elizabeth, tell us what's in BEI's future. What do you think is next for BEI? What do you all, after you're able to bring advisors back together? I know everything's virtual this year, but what are you looking at as the future of exit planning?
I think so many things, Bill. I mean, we've got 20 years. 25 years worth of things to do. So I hope that you'll stick with me while we do it. And they are mostly in the area of sort of creative solutions to more efficiently get to outcomes. I realize that's pretty vague, but it sort of encompasses all the things that I see happening. And so, you know, as BEI releases, you know, features and upgrades to our planning software that you other advisors use in order to coordinate and accumulate the planning strategies for each individual business owner, there's more and more to put in it. There's more interesting and creative ways to combine planning strategies to get an outcome that where really the whole is greater than the sum of its parts, right? So I could recommend that a client do X and Y, but if I bundle those together with Z, I get a much, much better, more positive, more goals-driven outcome. And I see a constant movement towards sort of identifying and finding new combinations of ways to manage these different ideas in planning that really weren't being done before. People were really doing things, you know, in one of three or four or five ways, and that was kind of it. And so we've really come quite a long way. I had a long talk with somebody the other day, and this advisor and I came up with an idea for his business client that neither of us had ever heard of being really done before in this context. It was this sort of combination of things that we had done before, and then what he was going to do was go and talk to other professionals on the team and say, do you see any problems with this idea? Do you see any problems with this idea? Mm-hmm. And that, I think, that's the direction that we're going in, is coming up with new creative ways to combine existing, well-established, non-controversial planning ideas and maybe get more bang for our buck out of those combinations.
Yeah, the collaboration of what you've put together is really a key at the center of all of it, the collaboration of various advisors that basically have provided input to BEI over the years to really create a robust set of tools. Now, business owners can also ask their most trusted advisor for a plan that's powered by BEI's planning platform. And if you want to find an advisor who's specially trained in exit planning, business owners, you can go to exitplanning.com and use the Find an Advisor tool under Resources. Or to get started in thinking about the future, business owners can take a look at BEI's most recent book, which is called Exit Planning, The Definitive Guide. You can go to exitplanning.com/definitive guide. Or even to Amazon and get the book. It comes with online self-assessments and checklists that business owners can use to start to map out their futures. And if you're a professional advisor, then BEI suggests that you go to exitplanning.com and follow the blog, listen to BEI's podcast, it's called Why We Plan, or learn more about BEI's tools and resources for advisors. And as a final comment, Elizabeth, I can say that there are an emerging group of people that are calling themselves exit planners out there. And I think one of the key questions a business owner can ask an advisor is, can you show me a sample plan that you've done for someone else? Can you show me what the deliverable might look like? And that's where, if it's been a BEI-based plan, they'll see a well-organized, structured plan that involves all the advisors and their strategies, not just the back of a cocktail napkin. So, Elizabeth, I want to thank you so much for joining us once again here on Exit Coach Radio, and really keep up the good work. It's been tough times this year, but you're rising to the occasion by talking with the advisors and figuring out what business owners need, and we really appreciate you.
Well, it's been my pleasure, Bill. Thank you so much for having me on. I look forward to seeing you again soon.
Thank you. We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back after this.
And now the Exit Coach Radio Show proudly presents the All-Star Review, a compilation of one-minute highlights from past guests. Hear more one-minute highlights and full interviews from these guests at ExitCoachRadio.com.
When your business value is wrapped up in your client list, what's the most important thing you can do to drive the value of your business? We asked expert Stacy McKibben.
If you don't have really strong, you know, client relation management tools, CRMs, as they're lovingly referred to, if you don't have tools like that in your business, it's going to be very difficult to transition it over. As a matter of fact, your next buyer is going to use that as a reason to drive down your sale price. Absolutely, one of the biggest areas of opportunity that we see in professional services businesses are going back to your existing and previous clients. Oftentimes, we just forget that they don't necessarily know the full breadth of services that we provide and how they can use us or even refer us to their friends and family. So that is a big win in most businesses, is just starting there. And it's very difficult to do if you don't have a good system in place with which to do it.
One of the most common ways a business is sold is through something called an earnout. And we asked for information and an example from business broker Chris Bond.
What buyers want to have happen is they want a seller to prove the actual value of the business by having them be patient and waiting for a piece of the payout. So in other words, once the transition period has happened, say 6, 12, 18, or 24 months, the buyer will make additional payments with the comfort that, okay, it is what you said it is. Had a very creative deal earlier this year where down payment was made for about 80% of the deal. A bank stepped in for a percentage of the deal. The seller actually financed another small percentage of the deal. And the earnout comes in years 3, 4, and 5. So everybody's pulling in the same direction, making sure the first 2 years go very smoothly.
What are some of the challenges for leaders in this knowledge-based economy? Here's CEO Coach Bill Anton.
The person that has the most influence over the entire organization is the person that leads the organization. And transforming that person exponentially influences change. My training as a psychologist, my understanding about the kinds of organizations that are going to be successful in the future are going to be organizations that realize that knowledge is their product and that knowledge can only be created by enrollment, not by compliance. And so the task of the leader of the future is to transform the people that work in the organization so that they want to give their best and so that they're willing to offer ideas and perspectives that create knowledge and innovation for the organization.
Medical insurance is a big part of your budget. How do you contain those costs? We ask benefits expert Rhett Bray.
We'll talk about wellness, is how we can start to communicate the importance of the wellness, and that we give the people and the employees the opportunities to do things that will help them to become healthier. We start to educate them on the importance of annual physicals. We start to educate them on preventative care. Women do this quite well. Men have a tendency to wait till body parts don't work and then they go, which can be late. And it's interesting, we take better care of our car. We change the oil. We see the light, the lamp light comes on, and for a lot of us, we don't do the maintenance that we should do on a regular basis. That will identify a lot of issues that people have that now you can start to address, either through medication, through exercise or diet. There are just a few key areas that you can identify that will drive these higher costs.
Okay, so we've heard the term before, treat your business like an investment. It'll be a lot easier to sell down the road. What exactly does that mean? We asked an expert, Don Berzin.
Many of us in the field encourage owners to look at their business as an investment. Some owners understand that concept, but many do not. I mean, for a number of them, they see their business as either a job, a cash machine, a passion, or an extension of who they are. And the term investment sounds a little too removed for them to relate to. And we also let it be known that a business is actually easier to sell when it has a passive ownership. I mean, an owner who is not personally critical to maintaining future cash flows. But let's face it, I mean, one of the last terms that ever come to mind when we think about most entrepreneurs is passive. You know, these people are doers, they make things happen, and sitting on the sidelines is not something that many of them want to do at any stage of their career.
And at ExitCoachRadio.com. We're interviewing over 100 top advisors to get you one-minute tips, ideas, and precautions so you can be well-planned. We upload new content daily at 6 a.m. and 1 p.m. ExitCoachRadio.com. Come listen for a minute.
Why would you have a revocable living trust instead of a will? Here's attorney Matt Amaro.
One of the main reasons that you would consider doing a revocable trust versus just having a will is avoiding what we would call a probate process, which is a court proceeding to distribute a family estate, which can be very expensive and legal fees, court fees, and just involves a lot of court involvement that can be pretty painful. So by using a trust, you can get out of that. Now, if your assets aren't high enough, that's one way you may be able to avoid probate without a trust. And the other way is you may have assets that are able to pass to beneficiaries outside of a trust and outside of probate, even if you don't have a trust. But when you have real property, you usually won't be able to avail yourself of those two exceptions to staying out of probate.
How do most people decide it's time to start exit planning, and what's on their mind when they do? Here's Jim Immel.
Long term is really interesting. I use the analogy of the light switch. Sometimes these business owners don't think about it, and then all of a sudden they wake up one day and they just want to turn the light switch off, and they go from being passionate 100% into the game, and then all of a sudden something starts feeling heavy. Maybe it's a personal situation that's happened, but they literally turn the light switch off. Most of the people that you and I work with, it's more like a dimmer switch. They just don't do it that quick. They do it over time. But what really a lot of them are thinking about is, how do I transition myself out of the leadership position, provide other people opportunity to get into that leadership position, so the business is being prepared to transition from a position of strength and not weakness.
People are nervous about stocks and bonds these days. What's the outlook for income real estate? We asked real estate expert Scott Tamkin.
I'm a firm believer that income property will grow wealth over time. And there are parts of Los Angeles where income property is still affordable. The west side of LA doesn't make a whole lot of sense, but there are parts of LA where there are still opportunities. And I firmly believe that, particularly in some of the outlying areas, the gentrification will continue and people will want to rent in those areas, particularly as public transportation expands. People have some extra money. They're looking to invest in income property. I would say good strategy might be to join up with others who are doing the same. There are some crowdfunding sites that offer some opportunities to do that, but I would be careful just jumping in and talk to an expert in the multifamily business. I think over time it will prove to be lucrative.
Protecting your assets is important, but when you do it is even more important. Here's attorney Harry Barth.
A very important component to understand is that, as with all business deals, asset protection being just one of them, is to be able to settle a proposed claim within reasonable limits. It's very, very difficult to do that if you're in jeopardy of losing your home, losing your business, and losing your life savings. So I think that it's important that asset protection is granular. We look at the various components. We take into consideration all of the goals and objectives of our particular clients. And there's not one size fits all. Every situation is different. Every background is different. Every family makeup is different. Every business transaction is different.
What's the best way to use Twitter and other social media? We asked expert Tim Templeton.
I just had a friend ask me today, I don't really get Twitter. What is the value? And I said, you know, it's two things. It's self-promotion, or business promotion in this case, and it's research. So if you want people to know who you are and what you're doing, and you create content, you create blog content, you want people to see it, one of the best ways to get it out in front of people is to send out an announcement using Twitter. Likewise, if you're trying to find people in your ecosystem, your business, the analysts, the resellers, the potential partners, you can find them by their activity on Twitter. You can interact with them, you can follow them, you can retweet things that they're sending, and you can create a relationship that way, which is a lot easier than it used to be.
And now the Exit Coach Radio Show proudly presents the All-Star Review, a compilation of one-minute highlights from past guests. Hear more one-minute highlights and full interviews.
Hi, everyone. It's Bill Black, the Exit Coach from the Exit Coach Radio Show. You know, one of the biggest questions I get on the show is what exactly goes into a business exit plan and when should I start creating mine? Well, I always tell people that the best time to start was 5 years ago, but the next best time is now because you never know when you might need it. So we put together a free report that describes what an exit plan is and what you should know. You can get it free by texting exit plan with no spaces to 44222. That's exit plan to 44222. Again, text exit plan to 44222.
Welcome to the Exit Coach Radio Show, the show for baby boomer business owners who are looking for cutting-edge information as they plan their 3 to 10 year business succession and exit. Every week, we interview top professional advisors for their best tips, strategies, and precautions so you can be well-planned. And now, here's your host, the Exit Coach, Bill Black.
Hello, everyone. Thanks so much for joining me today. Always a pleasure to have you with me. And if you wanted to hear from an expert about succession and exit planning, you are in the right place. So grab a pen and a pad of paper. Get ready to take some notes. My guest, Mike Liana, has been in over 20 years as a C-suite executive position with various industries domestically, along with 4 years of international experience with a Fortune 100 company. Okay, so he's got the big company experience. But as an entrepreneur, Mike organically grew his company from $2.7 million to $22 million in a four-year period, realizing EBITDA growth from $400,000 to $3.1 million. That's a huge jump in revenue and profits, so we're going to hear about that. Now, Mike joined Cornerstone with the goal of helping business owner clients plan for the single most critically important financial event of their lives, the transition out of their business. Mike, as a member of the BEI Network of Exit Planning Professionals, has earned the designation of a BEI Certified Exit Planner, or CEXP. And today we're going to talk about how and why you should grow your business value now to maximize your future. So, Mike, welcome to the show. Thanks so much for joining me today.
Well, thank you very much, Bill. I appreciate you having me on.
It's always my pleasure, great to talk to people who have actually been out there and done it. So I'm looking forward to talking to you about that. Tell us a little bit more about your background and your experience.
Well, as you stated, I've been with the major corporations, but then had the opportunity to purchase. And I've been involved with the major corporations and mergers and acquisitions. But had the opportunity to purchase a company, which I did, and which you talked about, and it allowed me to look at it, and I started the business with the exit in mind, which is different than a lot of entrepreneurs. But when I started the business, I said I had a 10-year plan, and basically worked backwards to accomplish the goals that I set out to accomplish, and since that business, I've been CEO for a couple of different firms. Just recently, before coming to Raleigh, North Carolina, to work with entrepreneurs, I worked with a private equity firm. And the reason I'm doing what I'm doing is because I did acquisitions for that private equity firm, and I looked at the entrepreneurs and the hard work and the effort that they put into their businesses, but didn't know how to properly package them and prepare them to be acquired so that they could maximize their value. And so that's the reason why I'm doing what I'm doing is to help entrepreneurs really take a look at their business and help them grow it today so that they can maximize their value when they do want to sell it.
That's great, and it's very impressive that you grew not only your revenues but your profits almost eightfold over that four-year period. I'm sure our listeners would like to hear more about that, but I don't know that we have time today for all of that. Let's talk about what you're finding. What do owners and CEOs tell you that is the biggest issue that they're facing today?
Well, as I talk to business owners and CEOs, their biggest issue is people. And getting the right people in the right seats on the bus to drive drive the business. And as I talk to them and as I looked at some data and whatnot, Gallup poll says that 70% of employees are disengaged employees. So what that means is that if you have $1 million in payroll, you're spending $700,000 on disengaged employees. And that's overwhelming. I mean, that blows a lot of CEOs and owners away. But in reality, that is really what's going on. 20% are totally disengaged. 50% are somewhat disengaged. But what I've been trying to work with them is to look at who that is, and either turn them around or move them, onto with another company. We do have a tool. I have on my team a licensed behavioral analyst that has a system that works with the CEOs, and with a 7-minute test, he can tell you with a 95% accuracy the people that are engaged and those that are disengaged, and provides for that CEO the opportunity to say, okay, now what am I going to do with that data? And what I liked about it is that it's data driven. It's not emotional. It's not what a feeling is, what a gut feeling is. It is data driven because what they measure is the natural behavioral traits of an individual versus the behavioral traits that position requires of them. And when there's a difference in those things, the employee becomes disengaged, and you have a likelihood of that employee leaving the company at some point in time.
In this day and age of COVID, and a lot of people have laid off some of their staff, of course, this sounds like it might be very beneficial as they hire people back on to find the right person for the seat in the first place. Is that true to say?
Yeah, I mean, Bill, you are right on. That's exactly what they need to do as they bring people back or as they bring on people is looking at making sure that there are natural behavioral traits, because if you're working and it's your natural way of behaving, guess what? You're going to be more productive. You're going to be more satisfied. You're going to have less stress at the job, therefore less stress at home, and it impacts the productivity and the profitability of the company. Typically, if you can get people to engage in their business, that business is going to produce 20% to 21% more profit than one that doesn't measure it, doesn't even think about it, and doesn't know about it.
Yeah, I've heard of this often in the past that it's always a good idea to try to get your people engaged. You say 70% are disengaged, and I've heard that figure before. What is a hoped? I mean, it seems like you're always going to have some percentage, like the Pareto principle, right, where it's 80-20 this and 80-20 that. Is there a hoped for percentage, and what's the impact of that percentage? You just mentioned 21% increase if you can get a certain number of people in the right seats on the bus.
Right. I mean, the impact is substantial, because what you're doing is if you're not in the right seat on the bus, your productivity level is going to, you're not going to operate at 100% efficiency. You're going to operate at 50-60% efficiency. And what this does, it tests people so that the CEO can put that person in the right seat and to where they can get 100% capacity or efficiency rather than just half efficiency. And that, just by doing that, you're getting the right people. They're going to be more satisfied. They're going to be engaged in the business. They're going to want to do it well. And I think it makes sense as people bring people back to it's a 7-minute test, and I was hesitant when I first heard about it, but so I took the test, and I'm telling you, it nailed me right on. I mean, it was exactly my behavioral traits, and I was just shocked and surprised.
Yeah, over the years, it's funny, I've done several of those tests, and they've all kind of nailed me, as far as, so it's, you wonder, or is it kind of like a horoscope? Do they just get you right out of the gate? But there's a lot of science behind these tests, and they were, I think early on, they were developed and used by the military to make sure that they had the right people, on the ship, if you will, in the right places.
Sure.
Let's move off of that for a second. One question would be if you have done everything you can to create satisfied employees, you still have another problem, and that is other people are trying to pick off your best employees. Do you all work with companies to help them also retain those key employees? I mean, it seems like if they're happy, they're going to stay, but there's always that compensation element.
There's always a compensation element, and one of the things that we do work with the CEOs and the owners is what incentive programs do you have in place? How do you retain your top talent? And you're right. You can do all the great programs and people feel great, but you got to take actions and steps to keep the right people on board through the different incentive programs, say bonuses, just incentive programs that keep that employee totally engaged and focused and aligned with the goals and objectives of the owner.
Yeah, and that's a whole specialized field as well today because, way back when you could say, hey, if you stay with the company to age 65, you'll get a gold watch and a pension plan. And, of course, things have changed a lot. The younger workers don't want to think about age 65. That's really old. They want to think about, well, what if I stay for 3 years or 5 years? So things have changed in that area a lot, and it's very important for owners to get in tune with that. So everything you're saying about the people are the biggest issue that they face lines up with what you're saying. What's the business owner's largest obstacle in building enterprise value these days? You built a company four times over in a four-year period. That's hard to do. How do owners do that?
Well, I think the biggest thing that the owners have to do is to realize that you have to build a team. It's not about you. It's about the team, because as you transition a business, it's not about the owner. It's about the transferable value that you have in that business. Now, what does that mean? The transferable value is the management team. It's the processes that you have in place. Now, that's difficult for an entrepreneur who's a visionary entrepreneur, who's involved in the business on the day-to-day basis, to say, you know what, I'm going to step away. And you know what, I had the same issue. I said, I've got to trust but verify the people that I put in the different positions. But I recognized as I was building the company that I knew, because I was on mergers and acquisitions, I knew, okay, here's what I was going to sell. I was going to sell a VP of ops, a business development VP, a VP of estimating, and a CFO. That management team was who I was going to sell, along with the processes that I had in place to maintain the business and to, get the results that we had. So, but that's the biggest issue for CEOs and owners is you got to step back. You got to let the people do their job. As a CEO, when I was working for the private equity firm, I had a management team, and I told him, I said, guess what, guys, you're not going to do business the way I do business, and that's okay. If we're 85% there, we're great, because everybody is going to bring their experience and knowledge to the table, and it's not going to be the way that business owner would have done it himself. But the fact is they've got to look at that and say, you know what, that's okay. And it goes down the organization in the same way. I told the managers that the people that report to you will not do it the way you do it, and that's okay. And I think that getting that message out to the group is, you know what, we're all going towards the same goals and objectives, but you know what, I've got to allow you to grow in your particular area, in your way, and do it your way, which is going to be different than the way I would do it. As long as we're close and we're moving in the right direction, let it be.
Great tips. Now, I have a feeling when you grew your company organically and you said you started with the exit in mind, that you had a short list of strategies that you needed to employ, and it sounds like one of those was designing that org chart and figuring out who needs to be in these boxes? What are the characteristics of those people? Am I hitting the nail on the head? Is that part of what you did? And what other strategies did you employ to grow your companies when you designed it out?
Bill, you're right on. That was a big strategy. The second one of the second strategies was that I had to look at the customer base and make sure. I mean, one of the things, I was a structural concrete contractor, and what I wanted to do was make sure that, and I worked for GCs, that no GC represented 10% of my revenue. So my goal was to, you know, because that way the risk of if one left, or if one, you know, something happened and I lost, I wasn't going to lose, you know, a big portion of my business. I was a small portion. I can make it up. And I think that was one of the key things, was to expand my customer base so that I did not have to rely or wasn't relying on a certain customer bringing in 20-25% of my business. And initially that was the way it was. I mean, when I bought it, you know, a customer was at 30%. And, you know, I eventually added more GCs to my customer base so that I didn't dilute that individual. What I did was grow it through working with other, which lowered his percentage by increasing the business with other GCs.
You made sure you had diversity in your customers, your suppliers, and your employees, I would imagine, too. Nobody, you know, how often, Mike, do we come across business owners who say, my key employee over there, don't bother her. She knows everything about the business. We don't want to upset her, because if she walks out, then this business will fall apart. That's a very dangerous place to be, right?
That is a very dangerous place to be. And I always had the, you know, I always made sure that there was a succession plan for each of the roles. Even as I developed people to become the VP of Ops, I actually became a concrete finisher, eventually became my VP of Ops 5 years later. And, mm-hmm. you know, but I also had other people that, you know, if something happened, I had a plan to bring in another person that could, you know, that could fill that role. So you have to be constantly aware of, you know, it's because you don't want a major, you know, something like that, or somebody leaving, having a major impact on your business. You don't want it. You want to minimize that risk as much as possible. And that's a critical element to always constantly be, you know, be aware of and be prepared.
Yeah, this is a great conversation, Mike. I really like some of the points that you're bringing to light that help business owners to grow their business and face some of these biggest issues. What would you say some of the characteristics of a company would be that will grow and prosper during after this pandemic, this COVID-19 that's basically caught a lot of business owners by surprise, and now they're starting to realize, boy, there's going to be a new world order coming into place if it hasn't already. What do we need to do to thrive in this new normal?
I think what has to happen is that the CEO has to look at the market opportunities, and what does that mean? Because in the concrete business, the concrete business that I bought was a residential concrete business. I moved it to commercial because I was going to compete with higher quality competitors, good business people that knew numbers and that knew results, and then I moved it from commercial to tilt wall construction, which was a specialized, which even further minimized the competitors, maximized the profit. That's how I was able to get the profit, was just move the company from a residential to commercial to a tilt wall construction. And I think CEOs, they have to look at, you know, what are the market opportunities? Are my people resistant to change? And I think if you are open to change, open to look at opportunities, open to expand, where it makes sense. Of course, you do your investigation, you do your due diligence, and you look at, okay, what is this going to invest? You know, what's the invest? What's the ROI? You do all of those things, but you look at that opportunity and say, you know what? What if we did this? And then what if we did? You know, what can we do with the current customer base that we have, how can we expand our services so that that customer that, you know, let's just say, you know, I'll say a number, $1,000 is now going to spend, you know, $1,300 with us. And you look at those really minutiae items, but they're all impacted. I mean, when I worked for the private equity firm as a fertilization company, and I looked at, you know, what was my revenue, my average revenue per customer, and my goal was to continually move that up, and by adding additional services, you know, we promoted different things that that helped get the revenue per customer up, and you know, and of course then going out and getting new customers, but looking at both the opportunity to get new customers and to take the current customers that we have and increase the revenue on an annual basis for you know, what they contribute to the, you know, to the top line.
Yeah, it makes tremendous amount of sense. So looking at market opportunities, be willing to be flexible and shift, and making sure your people are also on board with that. And I guess that starts with maybe getting them involved early in the conversation. Is like, hey, we're all part of this. We're growth partners. We're not just employees here. Let's figure out how we can grow this business. You know, for our listeners, if you're up at night, if you're getting up at night and with a concern or a worry, it's just called being a business owner. You know, business owners wake up a lot in the middle of the night and say, hey, I really got to solve this problem or things aren't going to be easy tomorrow. If you'd like to have a one-hour complimentary consultation to discuss what's keeping you up at night, you will want to be getting in touch with Mike Liana. Mike, how do they best take advantage of that opportunity?
Well, they can write me at my email address, which is mike@launchgrowexit.com, or call me on my number 239-872-1998.
Okay, and if you didn't get that the first time, I'll give it to you again. mike@launchgrowexit.com, which, by the way, that is the website to go to as well to look at all the tremendous resources there, launchgrowexit.com. Or call Mike at 239-872-1998. You'll be greeted pleasantly, and you'll be allowed to talk about what's for up to an hour. That's a very generous offer, and I'm sure a lot of people want to talk to someone who's done it, Mike, like you have, grown your company, taken advantage of all the resources that are out there. And now within the group BEI that you work within, you help business owners to create a written plan that they can use with their advisor team and implement a program of strategies so that they can get to wherever they want to get to, right? I mean, their exit might be transferred to a son or daughter or a key employee or all employees or sell to an outside buyer, but they need to start with that plan. And how long in advance do you find owners should start that plan towards whatever their next transition or exit will be?
I think they need to start anywhere from 3 to 10 years prior to a transaction, because that gives us the ability to make good plans to where they can maximize their value and minimize their taxes. You know, if we have the time, you can minimize your taxes. If you don't have the time, if you want to do it in 6 months, guess what? It just now becomes a transaction. What we want to do is be able to help them plan, make a plan to where they can maximize their value, minimize their taxes, and then transfer, like you said, transfer to whoever they would like to transfer to, be it family, the management team, or to a third party. You have all kinds of options. The closer you become, the less options you have, and also the less valuable or the less chance of you getting the maximum value out of what you put your whole life effort into.
Excellent advice. Fun to talk with you, Mike, and I really appreciate you sharing your wisdom with our listeners and look forward to our next interview where we can get into how the heck you grew that company. You told us some of the steps, but it's an incredible story. I'm sure look forward to hearing it. And again, thanks so much for joining me today.
Bill, thank you very much. I really appreciate it. Thanks a lot.
We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back after this. Please stay with us.
And now the Exit Coach Radio Show proudly presents the All-Star Review, a compilation of one-minute highlights from past guests. Hear more one-minute highlights and full interviews from these guests at ExitCoachRadio.com.
Of all the things that can happen on the way to the sale of your business, having a deal fall apart because of sloppy financials is probably the worst. Here's expert Addison Adams.
In the sale of a company, you are in a very cooperative process with the other side. If you're the seller of the business and the buyer is coming in and evaluating whether to buy your business, there needs to be a high level of trust there. A trust that you are not only being open and honest about your business and what you know about it, but also credibility that you know what you're talking about. And that when you hand over your financial statements, for example, they're clean, they're correct, they're complete, and they're not misleading. Preferably, they're audited, and not only currently audited, but going back several years. And this is so that there is a confidence that